What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Still Loaded Podcast. I'm convinced this guy Ace, every single time we start, he is trying to get under my skin. He'll say something and he knows what's up. Like, it's gonna
never
throw me all the way off.
I'm never like that. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yo, what's going on? Yo, welcome everybody. This is the Still Loaded Podcast. Y'all know what we do. We talk through, you know, relationships, we talk careers, we talk business, we talk sports, we talk entertainment. We basically talk about everything that's going on right now. So, thank you guys for joining us today, and we're going to kick it off. Yo, Ace, how was the weekend, man?
Hey, man, it was good. It was good. I can't complain. Mother's Day weekend, so kind of chill, kind of relaxing. Thought about my mom a lot. It's kind of crazy when you think about it, right? Time just flows by so fast, and as I was thinking about this, this is the seventh, coming up on eighth year, that I haven't had a Mother's Day, right, with my mom because she passed on. And I was just reminiscing this whole weekend about the things that she used to do, you know, with us, with the kids for Mother's Day, having a dinner, whatever she says goes for the day, which realistically it's 365 days a year, whatever she says goes, but whatever,
right? That's right.
Getting her all the gifts. I remember making her this makeshift card. I put so much detail into it. And when I gave it to her, she was like, this is the best gift. And I remember my siblings getting all upset. One of my brothers went over there, crinkled it all up, threw it away. I was so pissed. And I think that was one of the saddest moments of Mother's Day that I've experienced. But that's pretty much about it, man. Just hang out with the fam, just relaxed. About you?
What did I do this week? Man, I just went and picked up some flowers, did some flower runs, you know, for the family. And it was just really nice being able to give all the ladies that are, you know, a part of my life, just some really nice
all the ladies
flowers. I'm talking about family,
man. All the single ladies.
Look, to all you moms out there who are doing your thing, you know, we really appreciate y'all. You know, it just made me think a lot about when I was a kid. And, you know, just the things that my mother did, you know, for me, she used to kick my ass a lot. So that's the one key memory that I definitely have of my mom. She was the disciplinarian when I grew up. So my father wasn't even like that. He was a cool, chill guy. He got at me on occasion. But for the most part, it was my mom. Like, she was that one, you know. And so I just always think about how tough she is and was. And I'm just like, man, you know, they sacrificed a lot for us, and they gave us a lot. They made sure we had certain things, even when it was tough for them. So I always just thank the moms. And, you know, you think about it, like, most of the moms now, they're working full time. They're coming home, they're taking care of, you know, maybe multiple kids. And it's a lot. You know, you got to deal with the stress at work, come home and deal with, you know, another job, which is putting the kids' stuff together, making sure they're ready for school, making sure they're fed, and, you know, dealing with whatever issues they've had to deal with, too. Maybe they've had issues at school. So, you know, you have to be all things to all people. So I salute y'all.
Yeah, especially the moms that are playing both roles, right? It's crazy when you think about it, because it takes, you know, a lot to be a good mom. And then it takes even more to be a badass mom and dad, right? And it's crazy when you see how many single moms are out there in the world and what it's like to be in their shoes. I would never know. You know, I can only speculate. And I would say that without a shred of doubt, that is one of the hardest jobs in the world. And they ain't getting paid enough. I mean, I'm not talking about child support. I'm talking about, like, the government should be saying, hey, you know what? You moms are having to do all the things with your child, having to feed them, having to put clothes on their backs, roof over their heads, making sure they're going to school. You know, that's gas, that's insurance, that's, you know, 100% being on it, because you never know where they're going to be. You have to also take into account the personalities and, you know, if they're anything like you, and if you're a hothead, they're going to be a hothead. If they chilled out, hey, you know what? That's another thing to worry about, because I think children that are chilled, you never know when they're going to act up. You always think to yourself, when are they going to go? When are they going to do this? When are they going to do that? Right? Or maybe it's the reverse, where you're wanting them to be more outgoing and to hang out with their friends and not, you know, be such a recluse. And that is such a worry for these women out there, right? And not to say that, you know, there aren't single men out there doing the same thing, but so often do you see that there are more so single women out there doing the damn thing and just not getting the credit. I mean, a thank you and you're welcome is always the credit that they get from their kids, right? It should be. But yeah. I think that it should be credited on a bigger level, right? Get them that income, even if it's a $1,500 a month. Like that right there adds up, and you know, they need that.
They do a lot, you know, and you know, unfortunately, you know, we're dealing with a system today where it's you know, you kind of get reprimanded for having kids in a way. You don't really see the benefits of the workplace a lot of times. You know what I mean? Like you almost kind of get punished for it because it's like no matter what, even if you do everything you need to do for your kids, sometimes kids don't even really see it until they get older. So you could do everything for your kids. You could be the greatest soccer mom in the world. You could be, you know, making sure everybody gets what they need to get. You go to all the games. You try your best to attend all these different things. And like you said, a thank you is maybe the most you might get, right? It might be, you know, oh, thanks a lot. You know, they get you a nice card, or Christmas comes around, maybe they give you some slippers or something. It's like, that's great. Thanks a lot. You know,
That's like the 10th slipper I got. Thanks.
Yeah, exactly. We understand how difficult it is. And so, again, salute to you all. And, you know, I just think about all the chores and things that they take care of around the house. And of course, when you're there with them, those are things that you take care of as well. And it got me to thinking when, you know, when you're living at a house in a house with a woman, right? Are there certain things that you do as a man that you're a handyman with? Like, what are some of the things you feel you're good at? Because I know, for instance, with me, I like to paint. I'll get in there and I'll do all the rooms. No problem.
You're a painter?
Yeah. You know, I'll fix the occasional, like I'll replace the covers on like the light switches and like the outlets and all that stuff. A little simple shit, right? Or like, I'm really good with like technology. So anything technology based, like,
you know, with the glasses on.
Yeah. You want a router set up? Word. Don't be talking about my Poindexters, man. You know what I'm saying?
No, you're a buff-ass Malcolm X.
You know what's crazy is that, like, I think about that stuff, and I'm just sitting there like, you give me a router, you give me a new game system, a TV, well, it's going to be working in no time. But anytime we start talking about electronic, like, you know, like electricity or maybe some plumbing stuff, I'm like I'm not touching.
I know who to call.
Yeah, exactly. I'm getting right on TaskRabbit.
Absolutely. And they make mad money too. They make mad money.
You know, I did do some stuff before, like, you know, at my house, like for instance, if like maybe a circuit went out in the house, I would go get the circuit and then put in the circuit breaker, mess around with the circuit breaker itself. But when you realize like all the voltage that comes out of them things, like it's really, it's daunting, you know, like it's like this huge ass switch. You got to turn it off. Like it's crazy, you know? So it's just when you do stuff like that, you're like, You know,
it's kind of crazy that you say that, right? And it's doing all the things that a man should do, right? And, you know, fixing all that. And if they can't fix it, find the people that can fix it. And, you know, just to piggyback on that, I feel like some men feel like they have to be that way. And they have to go into that role for their ladies, you know? And so often it's like, can they ever become, you know, the opposite of that, right? So like having to show that masculinity, having to show that you can be that, you know, that Bob the Builder, you can go and you know, be Mr. Fix-It. What if they're not like that, right? Like, what if they're not Mr. Fix-It? What if they can't do those things? Does that make them any less of a man?
You know, that's an interesting question because, like, I've heard, you know, some women definitely say they don't respect a man that's not good and, like, handy in the house. Because, you know, you got some guys who are straight white-collar guys. They go to work, they sit in an office, they get on their keyboards, and they tap away, or, like, they do meetings a lot. So they're not really handy, you know, and I think some women, I've talked to someone who's just like, no, I like a man who knows how to fix stuff, who knows how to get down dirty if necessary. To them, that's a turn on. Like, they love shit like that, you know, and I think that that's cool. I think that you just have to be willing to learn those things and how to do them. Like me, I was doing certain types of things when I was a kid. Now, I can switch out a toilet. I can do things like that. I can fix a leaky pipe maybe, but when it comes to like these really intense repairs where you got to replace the stack in a house, no, I'm going to call somebody. If it comes to maybe, I'm really even leery about putting up certain light switches, like fixtures and things like that. I typically
one little switch and that shit just breaks down. Yeah, the whole neighborhood goes out.
You know, you get shocked. You know, you get shocked and you look like the guy from Home Alone. Remember the robber?
Oh my God! Yes, the whole top of the head looked like exactly. One of Moorhead candies.
Yeah, that's what I always think about. So I'm probably not going to touch anything like that because what little hair I have will be standing up on top.
The hair out of my nose is going to come out. Oh man.
Exactly. But,
you know, it's just crazy to think about that, right? I remember I was in a relationship and her dad was always the go-to, always the fix-it, never vulnerable, always was very stoic, can-do, and very just on top of his game. And I never once saw him, like, you know, be emotional or be vulnerable. And then I asked her, I was like, hey, you know, has your dad always been like this? And her response was, I've never seen my dad cry. I've never seen my dad, you know, break down. I've never seen him. Like, he's always been that strong rock. I asked myself at that moment, I'm asking myself that, you know, now as well, you know, can a man ever be vulnerable in a relationship? And is that something that's a turn on? Is it a turn off? Can they be vulnerable with their partners without receiving any type of backlash? Like, what's your thoughts on that?
Yo, that's a great question, man. Because I've actually heard people say that it's very hard for a man to be vulnerable around a woman because they've had it situations where the woman has turned on them. And that's even happened to me. Like, I remember I finally had showed some level of, now mind you, I'm not a crier by any means. And like, literally, I can probably count on two hands the amount of times I've cried as an adult in my entire life. Like, honestly, right. One hand. And that's not a flex. It's not something that you could be able to sit and say, see, I ain't cry. You know what I mean? But
right.
It's one of those things. I ain't no bitch. I ain't no punk bitch. You know, because, you know, one of the things my father used to do when I was younger is because I had a hard time understanding death, right? I didn't really know what it meant. So a lot of times my father, because he would give like eulogies or, you know, talks when people would pass, he would take me along with him. He was like, look, I want you to see what this is about. You know, I want you to see how people interact when they lose a loved one, just so you are familiar with this. So from a young age, like 7, 8 years old, I would go with him as he did this stuff, right? And for me, it taught me to be tough, right? Because I saw so much pain and grieving, and I saw how he was too, when he would always, like, even if it was his home family, he was not a crier. You know what I mean? So it was only when it was like really close people to him, like a grandmother passed away or a close aunt, you know, and that's when I would see him shed a tear. But it wasn't even like a boohoo. It was just see that one single solitary tear coming down.
That's that gangster tear.
Yeah. You know, and it's not that he was trying to be tough. It's just that he's seen so much that it was kind of for him just like, you know, it's just a fact of life. And I think that it's sad when you cannot be vulnerable with your mate, because unfortunately, I think there's toxic masculinity on both sides, for men and for women, right? You got a lot of women now who will say, okay, if you don't do this for me, you're not a real man, right? If you don't, like they'll say, well, like, let's say you like to dress a certain way, or let's say, you know, like maybe you like to push back a certain ideas that they have. You know, and if you, let's say you push back on a woman, like I've seen in comments on Instagram or whatever, if a guy is going back and forth with a woman, she'll be like, oh, you sassy, right? She'll call him out for being, you know, someone who's.
Oh, you're mansplaining.
Yep. Yeah, well, that's right. And I've heard that before, too. Oh, like, why do you mansplain? It's like, what is that? Like, it's just me trying to talk, like trying to, you know.
What does it call it when a woman does it?
Explaining. That's literally it.
That makes sense. Actually, that makes sense.
But, you know, like. Because guys, we're not going to come up with terms, you know. Just like we came up with all those terms.
We talk about the sayings. Remember that?
Yeah, it was a woman. A woman.
Happy wife, happy life.
Right? Yeah. He's like, see, now you're talking. Now you're talking, brother.
No man made that up. It's best to please a woman first. Man last. Right. I mean, I do follow that rule.
How do you feel about that? So you do follow the happy wife, happy life rule?
Oh no! The pleasing a woman first, and then. The man afterwards. Yeah. When it comes to happy wife, happy life, I mean, what if I'm unhappy and she's the only one that's happy, right? Like, you have to look at that. And I feel like it's twofold, right? The man has to respect his lady, and he has to treat her like a woman and treat her like a, you know, a best friend. But at the same time, know that there is some type of, you know, separation between that. There's not always, I'm always going to come to you with A, B, C, X, Y, Z, and all in the middle. I'm going to come to you with things that I can come to you with. And I'm going to come to my boys with things I can come to my boys with. I'm going to come to my other friends the way that I can come to my friends, colleagues, and so far and so forth, right? Family, etc. So if I can come to you for those things, don't feel like you need to be greedy and have the whole thing. Respect what I'm giving you. Know that I love you immensely. I'm going to share the things that I want to share with you, but not everything that I have within me is something I want to share with you, because you have your certain way of looking at things. Unfortunately, when you do say something that might make her think differently about you, it does pause you for a moment and say, do I really want to share that? Because now they can use that as ammunition. If they get upset, they can use that as a means to you know, open up about an incident that happened, you know, a couple of weeks ago or a month ago. They can start to try to put pieces together that do not belong together and make up a false, you know, narrative in their minds to come at me with. And now I have to defend myself with this stupidity. And the only way that I can get over it is if I apologize and say, I'm sorry, and you're right, over something that's so false. And now it turns into this whole thing. And I've been through that, which is why I know it's very true. So,
yeah.
You know, I believe that it's, you know, happy husband, happy wife, happy life. And that right there is, you know, you balance it out, you know, it's going to be a lot heavier on the woman's side, maybe a little heavier, and then less heavy on the men's side. I feel like the men should compensate a little more when it comes to giving more to women, because they are, you know, sensitive creatures, right? Like, and we're stoic creatures, and that's just by trait, right? And sometimes it's reversed, but so often do we see it in that form. And if we need to give a little more, and if we need to listen more, and men need to shut the hell up more and just say you're right, as opposed to wanting to fix, like we talked about this in our previous podcast as well, talking about, you know, fixing things as opposed to just listening and saying, yeah, you're right. That's going to make the whole relationship a whole lot.
Yeah. You know, you brought up a good point. Typically, I'd like to go by the phrase happy spouse, happy house, right? Because ooh, basically,
that's a good one.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's balanced, right? I don't believe in the happy wife, happy life thing. I think it's something that should be across the board. We both are dealing with stuff. Now, of course, typically, you know, the man or the husband in the home has to make sure his woman or wife has what she needs. She feels lifted and comforted and safe and supported. I believe in all that stuff. But I also believe that there is a dual responsibility. You know, it can't just all be on the man. There has to be some give and take in that process. So I'm in a complete agreement with that. And I think that men are very simple. We don't really demand a whole lot. Actually, I saw this post, and it was actually a woman that said, men really only need four things, right?
A sandwich?
For you to feed them.
Oh, really?
Give them all the sex that they want.
Yes.
Right? Shut the fuck up. Literally, that's what she said. Shut the fuck up. And she said, just be a listening ear whenever they need it, right? And when she said that, I was kind of shocked. I said, whoa.
Yo, shut the fuck.
I didn't expect that. She was like, literally, that's all they need, just to shut up.
Shit.
Listen to your man. Give him sex. Give him food. And honestly, it makes perfect sense. We're not that complicated. I just don't want somebody yelling in my ear when I get home. I want to make sure there's food. You know, of course, and I'm not saying, of course, we live in an age now where both people should know how to do those things, right? But that's really all that matters to us. Just keep me stress-free and take care of me. And I'll do the same for you. You know, and that's the way it should be.
I mean, I agree. I mean, I hate to say it, but yeah. I mean, the food, obviously, and you know, I love a good home-cooked meal, and vice versa. If I need to do that for my lady, absolutely, right? I do believe in shutting the fuck up is super important. I mean, honestly, when things are heightened and it's a back and forth battle, it's good to just shut the fuck up sometimes, and it heals. Like, you then realize that all the shit that you're saying is actually just stupid, and you don't need to throw it out there to the world, throw it out there to your partner, because now they're going to remember this shit and they're going to look at you and say, well, I know that you're very argumentative and you don't know when to stop and you don't know when to control your anger. And that is going to hinder your relationship. And I'm not saying that a man's perfect, but man has his pride, right? And sometimes when that's like really being threatened, think about this like a lion and a lioness, right? When a lion has his pride, he's going to just go at you, right? And you got to be careful with that, because and it's not just physical. I'm not talking about physical. I'm talking about the words, right? It's the words and how they hit, the way that they're talking to you. It's going to resonate within you, and it's going to make you feel pretty damn stupid in that moment. Or it's going to make you feel pretty damn aggressive, and then you're going to be even more aggressive. And then that's just not pretty for anybody,
yeah.
Right? And just like a man needs to know when to just move on, right? Hey, you know what, babe, you're right. I was wrong. And sometimes that's not good enough either, because it's like, well, what are you wrong about? And what am I right about? And why do you think you're wrong? And then they need an explanation. And that right there, you don't need all that. When someone admits, just walk, just go.
You know, a part of me believes, you know, I agree with you on that. And also, too, they know when you're patronizing, too. Like, you know, you yeah. always hear that. Don't patronize me, right? Because they know when we're saying it just to end the conversation, just to end the argument. And so you do have to be ready to be able to say, you know what? I was wrong about this thing and this thing, right? And it takes a lot of humility to be able to do that, because you got to be able to say, you know what? I was wrong. The only thing I don't like is when I'm the only person admitting.
And if you ask, well, are you going to apologize? And they say, yes. For what? What do I have to apologize for? They're looking around like, look at all me. I'm perfect.
And interestingly enough, I was reading an article, and in the article it said, don't trust someone who cannot apologize, who cannot see that they were wrong. And when I saw that, it made me think, because if you can't admit that you were wrong, then that means that you don't see yourself as being wrong, no matter what you do.
Yeah.
You will always find a way to justify it. So if you want to go cheat, you could find a reason and say, well, I'm doing it because this and that, right? And I think that's a problem. And when you think about it, it makes perfect sense. It's like, if you can't apologize, you're not self-aware enough to be able to know where you're wrong, and you will make an excuse for yourself every time.
Absolutely. Have some accountability. I think that's the biggest thing that people lack in as well, is being accountable for your actions. And another thing too, whenever there's an argument and you are in the moment and they're in the moment and you're feeling like you're about to erupt, do yourself a favor, do a root cause analysis and look at the beginning. And if you can't remember how the hell it started, cut it off. If you don't know how it started, move the fuck on. Because now you're just arguing just to argue at this point, and that's not going to help anybody.
It always amazes me where arguments start. Like, if you ever think right. about it, like, you'll be talking to just regular stuff, and then all of a sudden you're like, how do we get here? Like, what are we even talking about right now?
Right. It could be like something along the lines of, you need to take out the trash. I always take out the trash. Well, you don't take out the trash. Well, your dick is fucking small. What?
Right.
Well, you have halitosis.
Right. Yep.
That's why I always look around when I talk to you. Yep. Where did this come from?
And you need to stop wearing that dress because it's too tight and it's not fitting you the way you think it is. Oh, man.
Yeah. Those Nutter Butters aren't doing you any justice.
You need to throw out some of these snacks. That's what you need to do.
She's going
to
say, you better stop buying the Magnums because they don't fit your small dick.
But you know what, though? You know, getting to the snacks, that's actually a good point, because, you know, I've been on this kick now. I started Insanity this weekend. So I don't know if you remember that workout from years ago where
Insanity is insane. Yep.
Yeah, man. And so I started that this weekend and I'm in pain now. Like, I feel it. Like, I'm definitely feeling it. But, you know, I've been seeing things about dad bods, right? Like, you know, people are saying, oh man, he has a nice dad bod. Is that in now? Because, you know, of course I'd heard some years ago, of course, the dad bod was in, but I've never been comfortable with a dad bod. Now I have one. Right. But I'm not comfortable knowing that I have.
You know what I mean? I hear you on that. And I'll be honest with you. I do have a dad bod as well. I mean, I've had this for a little bit now, maybe like a year. I mean, I wasn't in like horrible shape, but now I'm looking at myself and I'm like, God damn it. I need some like at home exercises. I need to hit the gym. I need to do some things that are just going to hit me up. So I have this thing that I squeeze, right? It's like this like U-shaped thing, and you pull it out and you squeeze, and you put it above your arms and you squeeze, and this helps out with your man boobs. Because I was looking at myself the other day, man. Actually, if I'm going to be honest with you, I was over at this place called Coastal Card Collectibles. It's a card shop. The owner, Tibby, walks in, and I'm over there just opening some cards. And he goes, shit, man, where'd you get that shirt, Baby Gap? And I look at him. And I said, the fuck you just say to me? And he goes, yeah, and your man boobs are they're peeking. And I look at him and said, the fuck you, bro, what? I got pissed, man. I got pissed on a personal level. And I'm like, I like these people a lot. This community is amazing. And for those who don't know, I love collecting cards. I love opening up sports cards. It's a lot of fun for me. Went through this community because of my nephew. He introduced it to me and been loving it ever since, right? These people are very comfortable with me, obviously. So I'm like looking at him. I'm like, you geriatric fuck. Like, I was going off, bro. I couldn't help myself. And I never done this before in this shop. So I'm saying things that I've never said. And I'm thinking to myself, shit, I'm not in New York. People are going to take this the wrong way. He probably has a 12 gauge in the back that he's going to shoot me. Right? And he looks at me. He goes, well, at least I don't shop at Baby Gap. And I'm like, God damn it. You hit me in the fucking game with that shit. Yo, I almost. So yes, I've been doing a lot of workouts, just trying to fucking get myself back into that tone. I want to fit back into the certain pants that I was wearing. No, I'm not going to get there like how I was in my 20s, but I want to get to a respectful level where I'm not feeling like I'm going to explode throughout the stomach. And I've been looking at a lot of these things that you take and it helps out with the inflammation of the gut. I've been looking at a lot of those things a while, and I'm like, you know what? I need to invest because I want to get myself to a level where I can look myself in the mirror. I can, you know, not feel uncomfortable with how I look. And I'm going to say this, it's probably messing with my, you know, drive a little bit, I think, you know, with how I feel towards myself. Like, if you don't feel sexy, it messes with things, man. It makes you feel like, man, am I capable? Am I able? Are people going to look at me the same? And you start to, for some reason, I'm never a self-conscious person, but I'm telling you right now, man, I'm getting back on the.
It's amazing when somebody else calls you out. Like when somebody says something to you.
Amazing.
Well, I say that because, you know, a lot of times we'll be thinking nothing's changed, right? We walk around like we still look the same in some ways. And then all it takes is somebody to be like, you're putting on some pounds. You good? Like, or, you know, if you have like a grandparent or something, and they'll say, oh, baby, you putting on a little weight there, baby.
I'd rather have a honest kid say that, right? Like, you're fat. I'd rather have an honest kid say that because they're innocent. I would be okay with that. Even though I would want to kick him like a football, I would be okay with that because you know what? It's a kid. They don't know. In my mind, I'm like, you're a kid. You don't know. You don't know the world. You don't know the great delicacies of food in this world. Like, you can't afford this shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, but if it's a grown-ass man telling you that, or a grown-ass woman, if it's a grown-ass woman saying, you look fat, oh my God, I would be deflated.
It's a big deal, bro. And that's why, but the crazy thing is, when a kid says it, you know that other people have seen it. They just haven't said anything.
Good. Keep it to yourselves.
But at a certain point, it's like, you know, we have to be self-aware. And I think that's what it takes sometimes. Either you put on something old, and you say, whoa, this doesn't fit the way it used to. Like me, sometimes, you know, especially if you get like custom suits, right? And you put a suit on that you used to be able to wear 8 years ago, 5 years ago, you put it on now, and you like, yo, what happened?
I should have kept that material on those pants.
That's right, right. You got to keep that material. Keep that extra material because you never know. But
COVID's a big reason for that too. And I hate to say it because it happened, you know, a little while ago, but like COVID really fucked me up. I got bigger because of that. And I remember I was pretty big and then I got smaller because I'd start walking around more, started exercising, but I never really gotten to that point. And I think also, I'm not trying to make excuses, but it's laziness too, right? It's like, I feel like I have all the shit going on, have to do ABC, XYZ on the middle. And next thing you know, my day's over with. And I'm too lazy. Now I'm going to watch a show and maybe read a book. And you know, it's so funny. I'm actually reading this book right now and it's called Remarkably Bright Creatures. So just throwing it out there. This is a fucking wonderful book. It's apparently going to be on a show. So it's a person's first book and it's a killer. But now and I'm reading books, right? Because I want to keep my mind healthy. I want to keep my mind going. I want to keep, you know, entertainment happening, which is why I'm watching these shows, rewatching The Young Pope. Fucking hilarious. I will get on the movies that you wanted me to watch.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about that. No, you actually brought up a really good point about COVID, though, because I remember going through that time. And it's hard to believe that was 5 years ago. That was 5 years ago. I remember literally being in the office, and before they announced we weren't coming back, I remember about a week beforehand, maybe like 3 or 4 days beforehand, we were joking around. And it's like, man, people are talking about this thing is going to be so crazy. And you know, like, who's believing this? And then they're saying we need to be home for a week. I'll never forget that. It was only supposed to be for a week or two. And then that week or two turned into years. It turned into 2 years. And I just remember being at home and not being able to go anywhere and seeing the streets empty. Like, I remember, and mind you, I used to live in a very busy downtown area. Right. So a lot of offices and a lot of cars moving through. And so like you would step outside. And when I tell you there was not a car in sight, and it was just like something out of the Twilight Zone, something out of Last of Us, where you're just literally outside. Yo, yeah.
Last of Us. Great fucking show.
Man.
Yes. I hear you on that. And did you ever get COVID?
I did, but I didn't get COVID until literally 2.5 years later. It took some time. I never got it right away.
What was your symptoms like when you got it? What was your experience?
You know what's crazy? I thought it was allergies at first. And then what happened was, because, you know, initially, like, I started having kind of throat pain. You know, like, my throat started hurting a little bit. Like, it was like a little scratchy. And then the next day, I woke up and I had a bad headache, like a really bad headache. And so I'm just like, what's happening? But what's crazy is I was actually away at the time. I was away at a business conference. Oh. They had everybody come in. and they made everybody wear masks. And we were like, why are you guys having everybody here? Like, COVID is still kind of crazy. Turns out, you know, not only was it me, 60% of the people there wound up getting COVID. And it was over 200 people there. So,
yo,
bro, like when I tell you it wiped everybody out, it was like 120, 130 people that wound up.
Yeah, that's like 60%.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you can do some math. Look at you.
Okay, you fuck you. Steve Urkel ass motherfucker.
No, it was a lot of us, man. And bro, and when I tell you the way I felt, it once they hit you, it hits you. Like, and I wasn't like down crazy, but I remember being down that first day when I really felt the symptoms. Uh-huh. I slept for like 20 hours. I was out like a light,
man. Yeah.
How about you?
That's tough, man. I had it the first time with my ex, and I remember I had it first, she had it second, and I was out. Oh no, she had it first, I had it second. I was out. I couldn't get comfortable on the bed. I couldn't get comfortable on the couch. I slept on the floor. Couldn't get comfortable on the floor. I lost my taste. I lost my sense of smell, and it was like a month before I got it back.
Yo.
So it sucked at first because I just was so horrible and miserable. But then when I started getting better and I still didn't have my sense of taste and smell, I started to experiment. And I'm like, let's see what it tastes like to eat a onion raw. Let's do that. Then I did like I did a tomato with mayonnaise, and I did pickle with hot sauce, and I was like doing all the things, and I was just trying all the things that just sound really freaking disgusting, and I ate it, and I'm like, I don't taste a thing. So I felt like I had a superpower at one point, because I can eat whatever I want, and I was never picky. And then I start to smell the things that I had eaten before and after I got better, and I almost threw up. So yeah, you know, I can say, man, you know, it was an experience for sure. I would say it really sucked at first, and then afterwards it wasn't.
You know, during that time, you know, I was thinking about all the things I was doing. Like during COVID, that's actually where I learned to cut my hair. Like, because initially I was going to a barbershop every 2 weeks, sometimes every week even, right? I was going every week, and once that came, you know, I had to basically learn how to cut my own. I remember I had went for like a month, right, without cutting my hair. And I just felt so nasty. I was like, bro, this ain't it. I was wolfing, man. It was crazy. And I said, yo, I can't do this. You know, I didn't have any shaped up beard. I was going like a little fro at the time. And I'm just like, this is not it. And at that point in time, I was launching this huge project. So I didn't really care about anything else. You know, Salesforce. You know, we were launching a big Salesforce product at that point. And so everybody was just, you know, heads down on that. And then I just thought about it. I was like, man, I need a haircut. And then I would go to the barbershop, and you had to schedule appointments. You couldn't get right. You sit right down. You literally had to make an appointment. And it could take sometimes a week out because you could only have like two or three people in there at one time. It was all these things. And then not only that, but the cost of haircuts skyrocketed. Like it went from, you know, $25 to $50 to then to $60. And it was like, why would I pay all of this? So I remember I was talking to this girl at the time, and she was like, listen, why don't you just go online and get yourself some clippers? You know, cut your own. I was like, that's not a bad idea. I thought about it. But she was like, go right on eBay. Because you couldn't find them anywhere at that point. Like, you couldn't find them in Walmart, Target, nowhere. Right. So she was like, go on eBay. You might be able to find something there. So I went, found all the stuff I needed online. Had a couple of mishaps. I messed up quite a few times. But the good thing was I didn't have to go anywhere. So it was like, okay, I could mess around with it and figure it out. But it was that was something that I learned to pick up, and that's literally saved me to this day. I keep track of how much money I saved with that. Uh-huh. I've saved up to $17,000 at this point, just on haircuts.
Wow.
$15,000. I used to go so often, and not only that, but I would cut, you know, some kids' hair, maybe a nephew, maybe my son. You know what I'm saying? Like, there were different people who I would cut. So it was just like, all right, well, this is a trade that I picked up now, and I can legit do it if I need to for anybody. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, man. What about you? Did you pick up anything new during that time?
Let's see. I was gaming. I was gaming a lot and was huge into that. I was playing Destiny 2 and streaming on Twitch, and I was killing it. I still have a great following. Just haven't streamed or played, you know, recently, but I still have people reaching out to me saying, hey, you know what? You need to get back on this game, man. We need to play. You need to help us out. I was doing a service where I would help those achieve a level because they can't achieve it by themselves, right? And it was such a fulfilling thing to help out the community because I had the skills to do so. And not only that, but they were, you know, paying me to do this. I was making pretty good money every month. You know, they pay out once a month on Twitch for those who know or those who don't know. And it was amazing. And that's what kind of kept me going, was playing games and being lost in this virtual world and having, you know, virtual friendships with all these people and getting really close to them. And that has translated into, you know, an even stronger bond that I share with a few individuals from that community. But it's so funny when I think about it, all the things that I have is pretty much thankful for them. It's the monitors, the PC, the controller, the headset, this chair that I'm sitting on. It is absolutely amazing, to the desk, et cetera. So, you know, shout out to a good community, because honestly, if you have a good community, then you're really making it.
Yeah,
despite if you have, you know, 30 people or 3 million people, right? Like, if you have a good community behind you, no matter how big or small they are, you're winning.
It's true. Yeah, I wound up getting into puzzles as well. Like, I started doing a lot of, like, jigsaw puzzles during that point. Like, I would just put on a good show, and every day after work, I would start putting together this puzzle, 1,000-piece, 1,500-piece puzzles. Yeah, it was crazy. Like, some of those things would take me a while, because I'm the type of person, I'll work on it for 4 or 5 hours straight, and then there's some times where I'm still exhausted. I'm going to come back to it for, like, 3 or 4 days. You know, I'm so worn out. Yeah, but I really enjoyed that, man. I started watching some new shows. I watched Entourage for the first time when that was out. You know, well, actually, it was off the air at that point, but I started watching different shows and just catching up on stuff. And it just, I remember that was a time where if you weren't careful, like, you started having, like, breakdowns. Like, you know, you just were like, yo, you weren't talking to a lot of people. You weren't really having a lot of, like, physical interaction with people. So you really had to make sure you were in a good mental space. Like, people were struggling at that point. It was tough, you know. And especially if you had kids, you know, making sure they were okay, because that was a tough time for them too. You know, think about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really interesting time to have to raise kids during that time, because one, you just care about their health and their safety, but not even thinking about sometimes their mental health as well. Making sure they felt like they had friends that they could talk to and be around. That was important.
And a lot of people just took to social media too, and they kind of blew up. If you look at, like, iShow Speed, he was another person who blew up during COVID, Mr. Beast, et cetera. So all these people who are really making it right now, they utilized what they knew best and built this platform during a time when everybody had nothing to do but to be on social media and online, and they skyrocketed, which made me feel like, man, if I had that idea, I would be in a different place right now. Oh my God, right? It's just kind of crazy when you think about it. And you look at the people who are maybe posted way too much. I remember one of my friends, she would post everything when it came to her relationship, to her day-to-day. And I remember her boyfriend at the time was super pissed because he wanted some privacy. He didn't want her to record when, you know, sleeping or when he is cooking or showering. She would just want people to know what their life is like during the COVID era, and that kind of ruined their relationship. And I remember the conversation I had with him. He's like, I don't want my personal information to go out there into the world. I get it that she has nothing else to do, right? You talking about what are the things that you wanted to do when, you know, COVID was happening, and hers was just taking to social media and recording her life as kind of like a vlog, and it ruined their relationship. And so it kind of begs the question, right? Like, why do we reveal so much, you know, on social media platforms when it comes to our lives? Do we feel like our life isn't as grand? Do we feel like our life is grand and we want to share it with the world? Do we feel like we want attention or we want to be noticed? Like, what do you think is the psychology behind that? If you had a guess, obviously we're not psychologists, right? But like, if you had a guess.
No, you know, one of the things we talked about before was that main character syndrome, where people just feel like they have to post up and they feel like people actually care. And there are some people that might, right? But at the end of it all, no one really cares about you. Right. Yeah. You are entertainment. You are, let's say something's going wrong in your life. No one really genuinely cares if you get over it. They just are. They're there to see the fall. They're there to see, you know, the pain that you deal with, or, you know, because if you notice, if people post up a happy relationship or, you know, two people just having a good time together, people hate to see that. They would much rather have engagement with someone who is posting about an angry situation they have with their significant other or their boyfriend. And, you know, you'll see a lot of support. I mean, girl, you should leave him. Or girl, I've seen something like that before, but let you be happy, you know, with the person.
That's all drama.
A lot of comments. Yeah, it'll be very quiet in those DMs and those messages, right?
Just like the little video I sent you on Instagram. So I sent him a Instagram short, and it's basically of this pageant, and there was you laughing that, you know, there was a bigger woman, or a thicker woman, in this pageant, and she's tearing up. I'm pretty sure she just went up, did a little spin, did her little thing, right? The girl next to her goes up, gets in front of her, and does her spin, smiles, does a pose, and gets back into her place. But the jealousy in this other lady's face was so revealing, she ended up pushing her and then calling her, you know, a few spicy words.
Choice words.
Yep. And it was just so unique, right?
She was upset.
I was laughing so hard. But I think that she felt as if she had a shot, and she probably felt like, you know what, this is something that I don't do, but I'm glad that I'm here. And then you get someone else who is just posting up, you know, looking better, acting better, more confident.
Right. You know, but that brought up the thought, because, you know, for some time, I actually thought about, should I just get rid of my social media accounts? Right. Like, because that was something that I considered at one point, just because. Nothing necessarily has gone wrong, but you just never know. Sometimes you realize how much time you spend on social media, and you realize at times you want to, like, you compare your life to other people. No matter how much we try not to, no matter how much we think we aren't, you know, you'll see somebody doing some cool stuff. They're driving a really nice car, like they live in a really nice building or a nice house. And it's like, man, that's pretty cool. I could see myself doing that. Right. And before you know it, your mind starts to morph. You start to say, well, I want those things too. And then you start trying to figure out ways to get those things. And you're always chasing after and chasing after and chasing after. And so, you know, it just really made me think about the fact that sometimes social media is really just a lot of people kind of bragging, right? It is kind of like that humble brag where I'm not going to tell you I have all these things, but I'm going to show you, right? I'm going to pull up in that car. And then a lot of times you find out a lot of these people rent these sets, right? Have you heard about the fake airplane sets, the fake jet sets?
Yes.
Like, you know, that's like, to me, what type of sickness do you have where you have to fake being on a private jet?
It's that thing, man. Fake it till you make it.
Yeah. I mean, like, you got to fake having a nice car or fake having a nice house. And you think about it, like, even shows like Cribs, you know, I found out years later that some of those guys that had these Cribs homes, they were rented. Those are not those actual houses. And so a lot of times, you watch these shows and you're thinking, man, they live such a nice life. And these people are struggling. They literally, especially in the music business, right? They're not making a lot of money. You find out years later, they're in these horrible deals. They owe all this money back to the labels. But they got to show that they have it. They got to show that they have
next the nice level catfishing.
Yeah. And that's the problem. I think social media has actually become the new version of that. You know what Cribs was back then? That's what social media is.
I hear you. And I have deleted my Instagram a few times. I want to go back to it. but I would say this. When I've deleted it, I remember I was in a relationship. I keep going back to this because there's such funny times. I'm in a relationship and, you know, I'm on it. I'm looking at reels. I'm laughing hysterically. And I get the, what's so funny? What's making you laugh? And I'm like, well, Instagram's making you laugh. Well, what's so funny? I want to see. And I'm like, God, it's okay. So, well, that's not that funny. Okay. So then continue doing that over and over again, only to get ridiculed. And in that moment, I told myself, you know what? I'm going to delete my Instagram. No, you won't. Deleted it. And then I get the, you know, the nagging afterwards of why did you delete it? What are you trying to hide, etc. Right? So when you talk about the deleting Instagram, I think that only makes people want to question you even more. Like, what are you trying to hide? What are you trying to get away from? You know, are you hiding a family? You know, people get all these things. Like, did they meet somebody? Like, and it's so crazy when you have, you know, social media and you're so active on it. And then next thing you know, you want to delete it because it's good for your mental health. And you may have these honest reasons why you're doing it. It's only going to like instill anger, frustration, and this negative curiosity towards you from the outside. And I say that respectfully because people can help, to your point, with the gossip. They love that shit. They thrive on it. They rather see the bad than the good. So that means that they're only going to want to think about the bad than the good. They're not doing this for them. They're doing this for, you know, some other reason that's imaginary. And it brings me to like someone such as like Justin Bieber, right? You think about this guy and he has had fame since, you know, since he was a kid. And the amount of media coverage that he's getting is suffocating. He has an Instagram that he's active on. He has all these things. Now, what would happen if he deleted his Instagram? People are going to think he's going through a negative hole. He's depressed. He's this and that. He might hurt himself, etc. They're going to think all these things because they are in this negative mind space. And rightfully so. This kid is being freaking followed around by paparazzi 24/7. And you see in his videos that he's just like freaking losing it. I think that if we had a day without social media in this world, it'll do a lot of people a lot of good. I mean, the booty clapping social media girls out there, you guys are going to be losing a lot of money, but sorry, not sorry.
Bro, it's like, that's everywhere, man. And you're right. And people don't realize that, you know, sometimes when you overshare, especially depending on the line of work you're in, you could put your job at risk. You could put your career at risk. Because a lot of times people will post up stuff that is wholly inappropriate. And because, you know, once you put it out in the universe, you put it out on the internet, nothing dies. Everything is still there to be found. You can find anything. And people don't think clearly enough to say, well, if I say this or if I do this, I might lose my job. I could lose out on that position that they're looking at. Right. And so, you know, I've actually hired, you know, a lot of people at one point, and, you know, I used to always have people investigate their social media, because when you do that, you start to learn about the person, like the real person. You know, how responsible are they? Are they a caring person? Are they good with communication? And, you know, that was something that I was told to do was, you know, before you hire anyone, you make sure you review their social media accounts. And so that became a constant practice of mine. So I used to tell people all the time, if you are comfortable with having what you put out there being reviewed before you get a job, cool. But just know that that's what's going to happen. Just know that whatever you say will be used. So I like how you said that. People to be a lot more cautious about what they did.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned that if you put something out on social media, it might threaten your job, right? I hear you on that. I think the one person that can put things out on social media and it would not threaten their job is this Pope. Yo, what? This dude is a swinger. By the way, it's confirmed he's a White Sox fan. So,
it's oh, wow. Well, he's from Chicago, right? Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, being from Chicago, right? Think about this. His old house sold for $66,000, right? This is like maybe a couple of years ago before he was Pope, obviously. The guy fixed it up. He was going to flip it. Found out that his house was the Pope's home when he was living there, and took it off the market immediately because someone was going to buy it. Now people are offering millions for this house. And it's so crazy. They're talking about whether or not he should use it as a museum, like have everything, you know, obviously it's not the same because he already refurbished the inside, but keep it as a museum and have his like artifacts in there, or to use it as either an Airbnb or sell it. Now, before we get to this question, I just want to touch on how this Pope is just already given the rapid fire to Trump and Vance and his stance on immigration and all that, and how he doesn't like where their views are and how it doesn't align with the church's views. He's already going on it, and I think he's already also continuing with what the previous Pope was doing, right?
Yeah.
And he's aligned with that, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a good point. I think that the church had to make sure that they weren't switching ideologies between each pope, right? I'm sure that was a big concern because you don't want one pope being liberal and then the next one being completely conservative. It's like that would not work, especially when they're supposed to be, you know, the religious voice of the world, right? You can't do that, you know? And so I think that had a big part in that. But I know you mentioned like the words that he had against, you know, Trump and Vance. And, you know, you think about what happened with Trump and these tariffs, right? Man, I'll tell you. So they actually they met with China this weekend. They had a summit this weekend, and before the summit, you know, he had voiced that they wanted 125%, 145% tariffs on China, and China reciprocated and said, "Okay, we're going to put 125% tariffs on you guys on their import duties, right?" And so, you know, and of course, China, they don't have to kowtow to us because they're pretty much self-contained, right? They're they're a communist country, so of course they're not paying these people these exorbitant sums of money. They can pay people literally pennies on a dollar of what we would make here and still turn out a lot of product, right? So of course they have the ability to wait out any issues that can come about from tariffs. So, you know, I think Trump had this thought in his mind that he had the hand, right? He's got this hot hand, this strong hand. And if he could go in and just say, "Hey, we're not doing this. We're going to charge you guys this much," that they would fold. And President Xi was like, "Nope, we're not folding. Like, we're going to do what we want. And not only that, we're going to charge you guys too." That's
wild.
Yeah. And we see what's happening like right now with the prices is that now after this event happened, he basically said, "Okay, we're going to reduce our tariffs now to 30%. Right. And then so it's like, okay, did he really have the power? And all of this for what? He caused everybody all this pain for what?
For nothing. For his ego. For I would say his followers, right? Like, you have to look at it this way. His followers are his reason. He's seeing what the people are complaining about, what they're passionate about, what they want, and he's feeding into that. It's not the other way around. People think that he's saying all the things and people are following his directive. He's looking at it from reversed. He's seeing everyone for who they are, for what they are, and then he's feeding into the biggest crowd that he can get into. And that's how that's how you get his movement. So this is the will of the people, right? He is not the door, right? The people are the door, he's the hinge, and he can move it with their will, right? This is their will. This is his directive, and he's opening up the door for them because that's their door, not his, right? So that's what people need to realize is that he is doing things that are aligning to the people that he's answering to, not the other way around.
You know, and that's a great point. Well, I think he's more of a, like you said, a conduit, a hinge, right? He's just a mouthpiece. I think that, you know, people have been able to voice their anger, and he's been the perfect person to be the spokesperson for that anger for them, right? It's just a lot of people who are bitter, a lot of people who are racist, a lot of people who have misogynistic views, who don't care about women, who don't care about certain marginalized communities. And it's just a lot of anger and resentment and just hate that comes from a lot of those supporters. And so, of course, he's got to show he's this tough guy who's going to do what they want him to do. But he's running into this issue now where he's doing all this tough guy shit, but he's also affecting those very same people. A lot of people that support him are the most vulnerable people. You know, they're the people who will suffer the most depending on what he's trying to do. And I think what finally happened is the shit hit the fan. He started coming out with all these policies that are affecting everybody else but his rich friends. And it's like, hold on, we didn't vote for this. You know, you see everybody now, you look on TikTok, you look on Instagram, we didn't vote for this. You know, and it's now that F around and find out stage, right? Everybody's now at that point where they're finding out what's really going on.
Absolutely. And that's the crazy part when you think about it, right? He has so much momentum, right, at the beginning. And he had everyone on his side. Let's do this. Let's do this. Let's do this. Right now, they're seeing the plans put into action. What the fuck is going on with those plans? Where is it going? Who's paying for tariffs? Is it the people? Is it the American people? No answers. Now you're trying to freaking give me the roundabout answer. You're not giving me the honesty that we deserve, right? The Americans, they deserve honesty. They voted for you. Just be honest with them. And I know it sounds easier said than done, right? No one really wants the truth. What they want is the idea of the truth. I want to believe what I want to believe and that you're upholding my beliefs without telling me. I don't want to ask the question because then I'm going to get the real answer and that's not something that I want.
Yeah. Right?
So it's a blind following and it's really tough when you think about it, right? And you go back to you know, the Pope and his stance and how many followers, you know, the Vatican has in this world. And and the strength that comes from the Pope. You know, he is the Holy See, right? So he wants of nothing, needs of nothing, and he is invisible, but yet, you know, is carrying the weight of God, which is very fragile, very heavy, but at the same time, very, very, I would say, it hits the heart in a different way compared to words that we say as, what they say, mere mortals, right? We're humans. So we say things, but you have the papacy saying things. It's now coming from God. It's coming from, you know, a higher being. And that's the war that people are going to see.
And I think you're starting to, yeah, that's a great point. I think what you're starting to see is a lot of people who claim to be Christian, a lot of people who claim to be of a certain faith, now they're being thrust up against this thought of, okay, is what you're saying really something that's Christian, right? You want these kids to be born, but you don't want to make sure that they have the care they need. You don't want to make sure they have access to specialized programs in school for, you know, kids with disabilities. You don't want to make sure that these kids get fed when they get home, that they don't have to, get all their meals from school. You know, it's just certain things that they're doing that directly contradict what you say you should be if you're a Christian. And I think that you're starting to see that slip where, you know, if you have a Pope that is saying, hey, this is not what is in the Bible. This is not what we believe, right? This is not how we should be doing things. But then you claim to be a certain way, a lot more people are going to get upset. Because he's, you know, it's basically like sunlight being the greatest disinfectant. That's what they say, right? Because basically he's that sunlight, right? In a way, he's saying, no, that's not right. This is the way it's supposed to be. And now if you are claiming to be a loyal Catholic or a loyal Christian, and you're doing these very things he's saying, are you going to stay with him? Are you going to wise up? Or are you going to turn against him? And that's what I think we're going to start to see a lot. Are people
and he's young with him?
Yeah. And he's, I mean, yeah.
He was, he's a 69 or something like that.
He's relatively young. Yeah, he's in his like mid-60s, I believe.
Yeah, so I mean, he's not like, you know, young, but he's young enough to where he can be active and really go after the things that he wants to help change. Yeah. It's so crazy seeing that and envisioning what could be and how powerful people can be with the backing of the church, with the backing of, you know, the Pope, and what he's capable of doing is nothing short than what we would call a miracle, right? With his words and his sway and his gestures. And it's wild to me. And I still feel a certain way about this. It's wild to me how people can become so small in front of a Pope because of how grand they are. I've seen it on live TV, and it's wild to me, the power that one must have, and also the humility that one must have to really hold this office. And you just wish that the president was like that.
You know, and for many, many years, that was the case. Like, who would ever think we would be in a place now where you have to worry about a president sending out memes of himself as the Pope?
Did you see the thing with that? He's like, oh yeah, you know, they're just having fun. They're just doing their thing.
That's a troubling thing for me. Like, what? I mean, troubling is like a very light way to say nobody should have access to this, man. Like, what are you talking about? We got people using the official White House account to put up memes, Star Wars memes, Pope memes. It's like, what are y'all doing? Like, where is the level of respect for the office? That's the part that really just disgusts me, because you don't see this in any other country. No other country is posting up this type of weird stuff. Only here. Only here is that happening.
And I think he's doing that just because he wants to make light of it. Now, if it was a different, you know, party in office, there would have been hell to pay. Why are they doing this? So unprofessional. You know, they should not be doing this. This is the United States of America. This is a joke. But because it's because he's doing it, it's okay. It's not going to, you know, come out, you know, wrong. It's not going to be like, hey, you know what? We made a mistake. No, there's no accountability. There's, hey, we're having fun. Shut up. Move on. Next.
The right wing is like the ultimate group of hypocrites. I've never seen a bigger group of people that is like, look, yeah, we know we said this about you guys just 2 years ago, but yeah, now that Trump is here, you know, we don't care. Right? We don't see it. We turn a blind eye to it. We explain it away. I watch some of these shows sometimes on CNN, where they have these guys debating, and it's basically like Trump supporters, and it'll be a couple of, you know, like more left-leaning. and they always switch up their stance, watching them squirm from something that they said months ago. A lot of times it'll be something like a written article that they wrote. And then when it's brought before them, like, hey, didn't you write this? Didn't you write that Trump was not suitable for office? And
no habla inglés.
Like, you know, and they're like, well, you know, it's a different time. The American people voted him in. And so what am I supposed to do? You know, and it's like, have some morals. Stand on what you're supposed to stand on. You know, like, don't switch up with the wind and don't be afraid. If that's the way you felt then, how do you switch it up now? To me, as a man, I can't respect any man that does that. Like, if a man switches up your stance like that, bro, you're a bitch. Like, you know, there's certain things that you should not be able to just switch up on. Stand on your morals. Stand on your 10 toes. Like, be for real about it. And that's when I just lose a lot of respect for these Republicans, man. They just don't have it. And then, one, they don't deal off of facts. Everything is emotion. Everything is anecdotal. Everything is about, you know, cultural or social things. It's never about the real things. It's never about the things that actually matter. And so I have a lot of disdain for a lot of these cats, for real.
No, I hear you. And that's the truth, man. I mean, you have to really look at what's being consistent and what's being inconsistent. I mean, again, we picked on Vance before. I'm going to pick on Vance again. You know, he hated Trump, calling him all sorts of names, saying that he is unfit to be office. And next thing you know, he chose the position
over him. And he used to dog Trump.
Man.
My God, like,
man.
He used to dog him. And then to see him not only that, but just become a sycophant. Like, he's legit become a butt kisser. Like, he legit will kiss Trump's shoes if he lets him. And it's just really, it's disconcerting to see. I hate to see that type of stuff, man. Just stand on what you're supposed to stand on. And, you know, like, Trump is a big believer in ratings, right? That's all he cares about. He just brought in Judge Jeanine Pirro. Of course, I think there was a stat that said he's brought over like 23 people from Fox News to be in his administration.
What?
23 people. And at the end of the day, like, look, we already know he can't get access to the best because the best doesn't want to work for him. They don't want their reputation sullied by working in his administration. So he has to pull from the bottom of the barrel. It's like, okay,
totally.
Who wants the job? Like,
you want to make some money?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you, all right, come on. You, all right. Yeah,
let's have a steak tonight. Let's have a really big steak.
You want to send out classified information on your personal cell phone? Fine. Don't worry about it.
Just delete it afterwards. Snapchat has a delete section, right? It auto-deletes. Okay. Just auto-delete.
You got a D average in college? That's all right. Come on.
No, you're fine. Hey, look at me. Leader. Leader right here. Leader. Thank you.
That's right.
I'll make them disappear. It's fine.
You only been in the Army a year. It's fine. You could be on the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
You're smart. Hey, I'm the smartest person in the room, but you're smart.
You know, but it just goes to show, you know, his thoughts on and views on things like that. But in terms of ratings, you know, I was actually watching one of my favorite shows. You know that show, Suits?
Yes, I love Suits.
Oh, man,
yes.
the first iteration was amazing. What's messing with NBC canceled the new version of Suits already after the first season, bro?
What? Why?
Yeah, the ratings just were not what they wanted them to be. And, you know, it just really made me ask, you know, what was it about that initial show that captured everybody, man? Like, and how, why is it that sometimes remakes of shows never have that same, like, lasting power, that same effect? Like, what do you think it is?
I think it's because they're unoriginal. They try to mimic what was in the past. People evolve from what they liked back then to what they're like now. So if you're taking something from the past and you're making it, you know, years later now, you have to look at all the other shows they're watching too and kind of incorporate that type of, like, you know, action or thrill or certain types of scenes that really capture the attention. Do your research on what scenes were really, you know, grossing high, what had the highest viewership, and then try to capture what they did right and then use that and whatever remake that you're trying to make. Don't try to make it similar, because then it's just stupid and it doesn't have
to be. Especially if you use different characters. Yeah, if you're using different characters, but you try to make the premise the same, it's not the same.
You had a legit princess in your first, like, you know what I mean? Like, she's a princess now. Like, you have those things that were making it raw. You had the skinny kid who has a freaking memory that most people would just die for. And you had this guy who started from the barrel all the way to the top to being partner, looking good, dressing well, has all the things that men would want, right?
Yeah.
They have power, they have, you know,
confidence,
they have the women, they have the money, like the position, They have all the things, right? And he has the suave, like, you have all these things. And you have this other guy who's just sloppy as fuck, but you know what? Smart as fuck, so he's going to get by. And then you have all the people that are just trying to get after them within this law firm in New York City. Now, I get it. New York City, raw dog. Fucking, it's on it all the time. Yeah. But then you get L.A., which, like, why make it in L.A.? L.A. is not the same. Like,
I agree.
And if I have to say it, it's like the redheaded stepchild of New York City. you don't, like, it's cool to visit, but why would you make a show there? I mean, I can understand, like, sports, right? Sports out there because it's sunny all the time. But you got gloom. You got, you know, these mountains of infrastructure all around you. You have New York attitudes. You got L.A. fakes. Like, what's the difference?
You know why? You know what I was thinking? And it's so crazy you mentioned that, because that was my thought too. Like, to me, New York is just a grittier place. It's more like, no, when you go to New York, you don't necessarily know what you're going to get. Whereas if you go to an L.A., it's not the same level of hustle and bustle. It's not the same. You know, you got palm trees over there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, to me, if you got palm trees, it's not as... Uh-huh. You know what I mean? It's not as intense as working in a New York City where you got street lights and you got...
It seems relaxed.
Yeah, no. You know, it's just very different, right? And so that was my thing too. Like, did you have a favorite character? Like, I had one and I feel like it was... honestly, I kind of fluctuate. Of course, Harvey was that dude. Like, he was
Harvey was the man. I would say, yeah, that's my favorite character. He just had such fucking boldness to him. And he had the confidence and... He had the swagger, and I think that right there was just beautiful. Like, yeah. That's a depiction that we want. Like, we live that a little bit, you know what I'm saying? Like, we had the swagger when we go to work. We go out, we get drinks, talk to people, very communicative. People want to talk to us. It's that type of deal. We have that aura about us. Yeah. And he has that, too, and I feel like that. I kind of resonated a little bit with that.
I agree. And that's what I said, too. I liked Harvey. I liked Lewis a lot, too. Lewis was one of my favorite characters.
Lewis is a little fucking weasel. Fuck that bitch.
He was a weasel at... But what I liked about him, too, was the fact that deep down, all he really wanted was just to be accepted. He wanted people to view him as what he was, which was a brilliant lawyer. But he was always second fiddle. He did do some weasel shit, but everybody did on that show. Let's be real. Everybody did some shit that was kind of like underhanded. It's just that Harvey was such a, you know, when you looked at him, he was just basically like, look, I don't care the situation. I know a way to get out of it. He always had that in his mind, whereas no matter what, you knew he was going to figure out the solution.
Right. But Harvey didn't use his underlings to make him look better or to get ahead. This guy did. He used those that are beneath him as stepping stones to make him look better. Right. Harvey did the opposite. He was like, I'm going to get my hands in the mix. I'm going to get dirty. I'm going to roll up my sleeves. I'm going to fucking go toe to toe and I'm going to make sure I get this done. And if I can't do it, you know what? You can do it. Like, he trusted, right? And he's like, you know what? If I can't do it, you're going to do it. You're going to be on it. Go.
Yeah.
He had that where he trusted. And I think that's really good. It's like it's planting that seed and letting it grow. So yeah. The guy, he's more like, fuck that. I'm going to use you, abuse you, and get ahead that way.
I think Harvey was a brawler, and that's what I liked about him. You knew he was going to get in there. He was going to get in the ring and fight no matter what. That was cool. I like Lewis's character because, yes, he was tough on those people, but they became better for it. If you ever realize, a lot of them came back and were like, Lewis is the man. He really taught them how to go off and be better lawyers. If they went to another firm, the firm snatched them up quick because they were like, oh, you worked at Pearson Hartman? Oh, and you worked under Lewis? Cool. Like, we want you over here. I think that is cool. Like, that's really good development of a career, you know, and of people who are trying to do their thing. That takes a lot, you know, to be able to coach people, to be able to bring, you got these first through 5 years coming along in terms of like the length of their legal careers.
Right.
And you're making them into the best lawyers in the world. Best lawyers. You know what I'm saying? That's
I think cool. Donna was one of my favorites too.
Donna was cool. She was sexy. Yo. Like, that redhead. Yo, she was a sexy little redhead. Can't lie. And I think her confidence was what did it for me.
Her sarcasm too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything that she did was just...
And the fact that she knew everything. Like, there wasn't anything you could get past her. She was able to tell you what you were eating for dinner tonight, where you were going based upon what you had on. Like,
what's that guy who says on Instagram, yeah, triple decker, no look behind, smash.
I like that guy too, yo. That guy's legit, yo. Double smash.
Yeah, Donna is like elbow through the chairs, something like that. But I'm breaking the bet on this smash. Yes, absolutely.
I'm letting her take me to all the courthouses.
She looks like she talks a lot, but you know what? It looks like she also really knows how to handle a man smash.
Respectfully.
She knows how to change a tire. Smash. Respectfully.
Yo, I like his delivery. He's really good at that. Yo, salute to you. Salute to you, brother.
Yeah, salute.
But yo, like, do you ever watch shows? Because to me, I watch certain shows to be inspired from them, right? They start off as good entertainment for me, but when you realize they actually teach a lot of like different lessons, right? Just about how to interact with people at the office, how you should carry yourself, like with a certain level of confidence. Suits was one of those ones for me, of course. And then shows like House of Cards with Kevin Spacey. That's another one.
House of Cards, that's... Yeah. Before the allegations. And him going to court, that dude was on fire.
He's such a talented actor, man. Like, that guy... I love that show, man. And I loved it because it was all about long-term strategy. That entire show was literally him planning to become the president. Accomplished his mission. You know, literally from the first episode, I'll never forget that. For you guys who haven't seen it, I'm about to give a little spoiler, but on some real shit, like the way when he felt out he was getting passed over on a specific position, and his wife, she knew he was upset. He came in the house and threw like all the glasses like on the floor. And she was like, "What's wrong? What happened?" And he tells her, and she was like, "So what are we going to do?"
She was the baller wife. Like she was
a rider.
When I was watching this, I was thinking to myself, "I want her. I don't care how. I don't care what. I want someone like that."
Yes, exactly. That's what I said. I want someone like that.
They want to support you. They want to be there for you, but they also have their own agenda as well. And you two have your thing where you can interlock and interlace your different things, but you can go your separate way. You can go your separate way, and we'll meet at a certain level to then go over things, and then we'll go again on our separate ways. Right. Like that's a sexy ass relationship.
That's right.
And
that's what I say. Yeah.
What I envision a relationship to be, it'll be like that. That is hot as fucking. Yeah, you know what? They cheated, right? He cheated, she cheated, but they knew.
They had an arrangement. It's like they knew. Yeah.
She goes, I knew all along. And he goes, yeah, I know too. And, you know, her with the reporter and him with the other reporter. It's like, you know, they knew what the fuck they were doing.
Yeah. And then when she had an arrangement. Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah. She was such a dope person. I loved her character, man. Because literally from that time that they sat down with the cigarettes and they were sitting there talking through the plans and they sat up the whole night and orchestrated this whole
Xbox.
Thing. Yo. It was like literally when you think about it was Shakespearean. It was really on some Othello, on some, you know, on that type of vibe, the way they literally sat down, they conspired, they knew who they were going to take out and when. It was very masterfully. That was a beautiful show, man. I love that show. Now, it was a lot of underhanded stuff that went on, but again, to me, that just was about strategy. It was about
And then when it didn't work out, it got violent.
That's right.
We ain't going to say that, but it got violent.
Yeah.
Yeah, when that happened, you know, when they
met in the train station, you talking about?
Oh, yeah,
bro.
Yo, I lost it. I was like, ain't no.
I did not see that coming at all.
Nope.
Because you know she was a main character at that point. Like she was in every episode. She was a main character. No. So
I mean, you know what? That's what happens when you go too far and you step out of bounds from your original arrangement, and you try to get a one up. You know what's going to happen? You're going to have to meet the consequences. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know what that is, right? It could be anything, but I'll tell you right now, she won't have time to redeem herself.
Yeah, she got a train to catch.
Boy, bye.
But for everybody that knows what we're talking about, y'all know what we're talking about.
Yep.
She's got a train to catch.
That was crazy.
Yeah, that was a great show. Yeah, like any shows from your side besides those two that like really... that you watch for that perspective?
You know, The Young Pope. I just rewatched that. I watched it when it first went out. Just rewatched it again. And The Young Pope was just absolutely amazing. Jude Law has an amazing perspective.
He's a great actor.
Fun actor. And there's another one that came out that I did not see in 2020. It's called The New Pope. So I'm going to watch that. I just found that out. So it was The Young Pope and now it's The New Pope. So I'm trying to figure out what's happening, but I'm going to watch that later on. But The Young Pope, he gets in. He is a very conservative-ish, not very, but he's a conservative-ish, you know, Pope. Very young, 49 years old?
Oh,
49?
Wow. Yeah, that is young.
Oh, yeah, super young. They don't know how he got, you know, the votes. They talk about it's the breath of God. Then there was this scheme on how to, you know, blackmail him to get him out of office because he is choking up all the funds within this church because they make a lot of money off of the image of the Pope, selling it, etc. He's like, I'm not going to be seen until I want to be seen. Waits for a long time to be seen. All those other things happen in between. He has a certain gift. I'm not going to share that gift. And just the politics that comes with being a Pope with all these different countries, it's nuts. And he did an amazing job. And being an American Pope as well, by the way. So,
okay. So now that adds a whole twist on it. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So it is a very good show. So when I was watching that, I'm like, oh my God, this is great. There's so much that happens in it, you know, from a human perspective, meaning that you see the mistakes, you see how one can be too clingy, you see how one can be too ambitious, and then how to ask for help and how to get help and, you know, temptations, etc., consequences. You see all this within this, and I'm like, that's a beautiful depiction on life.
That's interesting. You know, for me, another show was Billions. Did you ever watch Billions?
You do not eat sushi that way. He is a craftsman.
I liked him. That was Wags. Yeah, Wags is cool. That show was amazing to me, and I'll tell you why. That's one of those shows, again, I watched for the inspiration, right? Because, again, and that's a strategic show. You have two guys on opposite ends of the law who are literally the entire time figuring out ways in which to avoid each other or trap each other in some way, shape, or form. And I just thought that was such a cool idea. You got this guy who's from the inner city. We're talking about, I think his name was Mike, right? Mike? No, Axelrod. Right?
Axel. Axe Capital.
Axe Capital. Right? Yeah. And I just love the fact that he was just very much, look, I'm from the city. I'm out here. I'm grinding. I'm just trying to get to the top. Of course, he has some shady dealings or whatever the case might be, but I rooted for him to win.
Bobby Axelrod. Yeah.
Bobby Axelrod. There we go. I rooted for him to win. Yes, he was the bad guy, per se, in the story. But at times, Chuck was the bad guy, too.
Chuck was annoying as hell. But you his know? Wife, Wendy. Do I have something there?
Oof, man, that's why she got away with so much shit at that job. She used to talk so much shit, and they were just like, you know, we'll give you a $5 million bonus. And I'm just like, only in that world could you ever.
Yeah, I know that Wendy was, a good reason why I continued watching it.
But it was a really good show. They had a lot of pretty women really on that good. Show.
I love it. But yeah, but I don't know why, but Wendy's like her demeanor and the way that she talks and her body language and just her confidence was just, it got me to a level of like respect towards her character.
Yeah.
Got me to want to be a character in that show just to meet up with her.
Who was your favorite character in the show?
I would say Mike Wagner. Wags. Well, I think Wags, he is such a loose cannon, but he knows his shit and he is so crafty and he knows how to manipulate things to work in his favor. And that is Bobby's fucking go-to guy to get things done. Bobby's manipulative as well, but Wags, he's like a next level asshole manipulative, man. He just knows how to get you and he has no moral compass.
You know what he gives me the idea of in the mafia? You know how they talk about this consigliere?
Yes.
That's what I think about when I think of Wags. Like, he's that consigliere. He'll give you all the dirty ways. He'll give you all the ways to figure it out, and then you make the decision. But he always knows what to tell you, you know, and he always has the answer, right? Mm. I love that. I think for me, my favorite character on that show, man, there was a lot of characters to choose from. But I'd have to say I like Taylor a lot.
Taylor was the bald one, right?
Yeah, I liked Taylor. I liked her character. She was like a computer, a living computer. Like the way she moved and she was very just in thought, just, no, I'm going to go with this. And she was, again, confident. That's what I loved about that.
She erred on the cocky side, I think.
You know what? But she knew her shit.
And like, she was talking about her favorite. You see when she says things? Like, yeah. Mm. Yeah, we're going to go this way. Like, it's like, what are you doing? Why are you doing so much facial expressions? You don't need all that. Just to say, yeah, we're going to do this.
I like that part of her character because it showed, you know, again, she was a first year intern. Bobby saw something in her right away and was like, yo, I want her to work here, you know, and for him to say that for him to be on that type of time, she must have been good at what she did. And I think that that's what happens when you are excellent at what you do.
Yeah.
That level of confidence you have is like, you don't want to lose me. Like, you know, you want my advice. You want what I bring to the table. And for even somebody like Bobby to recognize that, that just meant that she was that good.
Well, if you think about it like a man, right? She's a woman. She's obviously a lesbian. There's a lot of men in the office. So wasn't she a lesbian?
She was non-binary was the word. She basically, she was with guys and girls on the show.
Well, excuse the fuck out of me. I didn't know that.
Yeah, man.
I guess I skipped that part. But anyways, I'm thinking about Bobby, and he's probably like, hey, you know what? She's probably not. She is probably not, or they. What binary is they?
They go by they.
I want to make sure that I'm correct on this. Don't want to upset anybody, yourself included.
Good job, Ace.
So he's probably like, yeah, they won't be looking for dick in the office. So obviously they'll be doing their job, right?
You never know, man. You never know. But no, that was I tend to watch shows like that because, again, it's about what can I learn. When you work in a corporate world like, you know, we do and have, it's just one of those things where you have to know how people think, how they move, and you got to be ready. And I think a lot of it is confidence, right? Uh-huh. How much confidence do you have? Are you ready to, you know, make the necessary moves you have to make to succeed? And you know, when people look at you, do they say, yo, like, he's the best at what he does, right? Like, that's one of those things that I've always kind of fought for, is for people to have that reputation. Like, you want to have that reputation where people are like, yo, we can let go of all these people, but we need this guy. He's going to get it done for us. You know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely.
That actually leads me to, you know, another thing. So, a lot of people have asked us before in the past, like, what do I do? I have an interview coming up, right? Like, and they'll say, hey, you know, I got this interview coming up and I never get the job. I want to know why I never seem to close that final deal. And it's a couple of factors. Like, and to me, there's always six big factors when you're going on an interview. These are the things that you never want to say or do if you're going on an interview. Uh-huh. One, that's arrive late. Got to be on time. And you know what they say? On time is late and early is actually on time. So you actually have to be early. Don't be walking in at 11:59 for a 12 o'clock interview. Go there at 11:45. Be there for 11:45. Have time to scope out the scene. You know, use the bathroom, whatever you got to do. Refresh yourself and have that level of confidence you need. You know, the number two is don't get too personal. Don't sit there and talk about all your business in the interview. Don't tell them who you have at home. Don't talk about, you know, your kids' ages or anything like that. Keep all of that stuff out because people really don't care, right? At this stage, nobody cares about what you have going on outside of the office. Three is don't arrive unprepared. You come with your resumes. You come ready to give them out if you need to. And you come understanding who you're speaking with. I think a lot of times people don't go into interviews knowing who they're talking to. And, you know, the internet is your friend. Know your audience. Know who you're talking to. Know if they just gave a TED Talk somewhere. You know what types of programs they're working on at this new company. You know, the types of initiatives they're trying to bring forward.
Right.
And be able to speak to them. Another is don't come underdressed. Know who you are meeting with.
Uh-huh.
Know how to dress during these specific interviews. So that is number four. Do not come underdressed. Number five is don't take too long to answer questions. A lot of times what happens is, you know, during interviews, people will hit you with the, have you ever been in a situation where you had to do this and you had to do that? And how did you overcome that situation? And sometimes people actually get stuck. I know when I used to interview people and they would get stuck on that because they weren't thinking that that was a question that they would have to answer. And you have to prepare yourself for all these types of answers because people at this point, they know that you are qualified, right? They know that at this point you've met some of the standards that they need. The interview was literally for them to understand, is this somebody that can represent me, right, in the office or on meetings? And two, can I see myself working with this person, right? Is this somebody that I can have a laugh with or I can speak to and we can reason on certain things? That's what the interview is for, right? So people just have to keep that stuff in mind. And, you know, just so that, again, don't take too long to answer questions. Prepare. Make sure you've asked yourself these questions. Do mock interviews with some of your friends. Have them ask you a series of questions. You need to be able to deliver. So just as important as your answer is the delivery. You got to be able to close that deal. And number six is don't arrive without your own set of questions. Every time you go to an interview, make sure that you have questions for them, just like they have questions for you. Because again, what does that show? That shows preparation. That shows that you took the time and the interest in them and in the project and in your role to know what you need to be doing. So those are the six things that you have to do when you're going on interviews. And I guarantee you, if you do those six things, you might not get every job, but you will at least be on their minds and you'll at least leave an impression. That's the key. Because even if you don't get the job in that instant, maybe they might call you back and say, you know what? Remember that guy that we spoke to? Yeah, he was really good at what it did. Or that, you know, young lady that we spoke to before. Yeah, I think I liked her a lot. She was always able to answer questions and she came in well-dressed. And, you know, first impressions mean everything. So if you do what you need to do the first time, trust me, you will succeed in landing that job.
And you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen, from Kane. Listen, man, I'm
pass it forward. You know what I mean?
I hear you on that. I think that's all great advice. Well, if I can add a thing to that, I can add one thing. It's be creative. Don't be like everybody else. I've heard this story from someone. And before I get into that, the Knicks are up 86-85. Just want to throw that out there. Go sure. Knicks. Go Knicks.
Yes,
now it's 88-85, but that's beside the point. The point is, you have to be creative. My friend told me that, well, she was working at this company. Someone came in for an interview, and when they came in, they forgot their socks. They were in such a rush that they forgot their socks, and they were wearing a black suit, and they were in all sorts of trouble, right? It's a very conservative office, so what they asked for would blow your mind. This individual asked the attendant for a Sharpie. They didn't know what the Sharpie was for, so they grabbed the Sharpie, gave it to the man. He then started drawing on his ankles all around to his foot, making it look like he had socks on. Now, people will look at that if there are other people in the office, right, for the interview and think to themselves, this guy's crazy. Why is he drawing on himself? It's his creativity from pivoting, knowing that he didn't have something that he needed. So he pivoted and found a solution. Now, be it it's not a great solution, because now you just marked yourself up. And if you don't get the job, it makes you look kind of stupid. But he ended up getting the job because this gentleman says he found a solution to a problem and didn't fold under pressure and still looked professional. Came in, had a good interview, didn't once reference his shortcomings. And that was that. So, you know, sometimes being different.
Yo, my man's at a real life Mentos commercial.
That's right.
My man did the real life Mentos commercial.
You know, I will say this, you know, I know people who have did some cool things in the past, such as a message in a bottle. They would have a courier service bring it over to the office and it's their resume in the bottle and they send over to the hiring manager. And if there's a lot of people who are applying for this job and
stand it is
very competitive, stand out. They will see this as creative and that will be in the forefront of their minds. And your resume might be the same as everybody else's, right? Might not be as great, but you know what you did? You just put yourself on the lot and now they're going to call you in because now they're curious about you. Now they're curious about who you are. Who is the person behind this idea and what is their mind like? Now you're
and you know what? That's a good point, but keep in mind too who your audience is, like you said before, right? Uh-huh. Because some people might not like the gimmick, right? Some people might not appreciate the creativity. You know, maybe if you work in an art field or a creative department or, you know, like creative director, like those types of things, awesome. Do it. Like, go all out. And then you got those guys that are super straight-laced, you know, who are like, literally, if you don't give me the resume in this format, in this manner, I don't even want to look at it. You know what I mean? You just have to know who your audience is. So that's a great point. You know, if you're doing sales, figure out a way to make yourself stand out in the sales arena, in the art arena, in music, whatever it is, like know how to make yourself stand out. And that's important. You know, in a lot of times, like, you know, I remember if you're dressed a certain way, I guarantee you that will be 9/10 of the solution. As long as you have the right demeanor and you carry yourself well, I've literally been to interviews where the way I was dressed got me the job. Like out of everybody else that came, it was, man, like you took the time to put on that tie.
How many people came?
It was a good 12 people there waiting. Well, yo, bro, you're nasty, man. Fuck you.
a good 12 people came. Sorry about that.
Yo, you turned this real X-rated real fast. Talking about careers, and you talking about some nasty shit. Lord, forgive him.
No. Ladies and gentlemen,
he knows not what he does.
In our previous episode, we did talk about love in the workplace. So if you want to know a little bit about that, you can click over to our previous episode.
Oh, that's hilarious. But yo, now real stuff though. Like, just be aware how you dress. Dress for the part that you want. Dress for the career you want, not the career you have. Really be intent about that. You know what I'm saying? Like that matters more than anything. You know, you look well, you present yourself well, you're confident in what you have on. People see professionalism, and that's what they want representing them. You got to think, when you work at certain levels, you are representing a department, and at certain other levels, you're actually representing the company. So if you have to speak before the press, or if you have to speak in certain arenas, they want to know that they can trust you to do that. So just keep that in mind.
Another thing too, eat breakfast before your fucking interview. If your interview is in the morning, eat. If it's afternoon, eat. You don't want to go in there with an empty stomach, because then you're going to be stuttering. You're going to be sweating. Your hands are going to be shaking. You're going to be in such a fluster that it's going to be shown, and they're going to look at you as someone who is probably not fit for the job.
Bro, that's a great point. Yeah, you got to eat. You got to eat ahead of time.
A lot of people, they get nervous. They don't want to eat. Scarf it down. Like, deep throat that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, just get it down. That's it. What?
Yeah. Makes sense, man. Definitely makes sense. Bro.
Thanks, bro.
This was a great pod, man. We thank you guys for joining us. Anything else you wanted to touch on before we wrap up here, man? How you feel?
Well, I think we have our fun facts.
Ooh. You know what? You were right, my brother. You were on point today. This guy's
yes,
on
fire. Yes, sir. You know what? Then I'm going to go first. So I think this is kind what of interesting. Got? All right. So I'm going to say two, just because this is funny. So you fart enough in one day to fill a party balloon.
To fill a what balloon? A party balloon?
Party balloon. You fart enough in one day to fill a party balloon. And another thing too, most people spend 1 year of their life on the toilet.
1 year. That's a lot of poop-related content you got there.
This may not sound bad, but it does give a lot of time to think about other things.
Yo, check this out. Did you know that you could fit the entire population of the world into one specific state? I'm going to give you a guess as to which state that is.
Mia Khalifa's vagina. All right, in one state. In the world, in one state. State?
Actually, city.
In a city. I'm going to give two guesses. Mexico City and city in China.
Los Angeles. You can literally take all 8 billion people and stand them shoulder to shoulder, and everyone can fit in the city of Los Angeles.
In the world.
In the world. All 8 billion people.
If I had a power, I would teleport everybody to one city in the world. So that way I can legit be alone.
Bro, you say that. Did you ever see the episode of Twilight Zone? Did you watch that show?
Hell yeah, I did.
Do you remember the episode when the guy, all he wanted to do was to be left alone so he could read his books, and there was a war that happened, and he winds up realizing that he's the last man on the planet, literally, and so he goes to the library to read his books, like to just start reading, and he breaks his glasses. Bro, that's one of the best episodes. I love that show, man. I'm going to watch some of that tonight, in fact. Twilight Zone.
What a dummy.
Bro,
don't you have like additional pair? Glasses?
That is one of the best shows.
First off, you're fucked for having bad eyesight, bro. Like, get LASIK. Hello?
And he has some bifocals on, too. Them things were like Coke bottles. They were crazy.
Go find a Coke bottle, bro. You're good. That's hilarious. That sucks. Yeah. That really sucks.
I used to love that show because, like, they would have these iconic, like, twists at the end of the episodes. Like, you know, you would think one thing and it was something else. I always thought that was pretty cool, man.
That is pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Well, thank you for the there.
You got it, my brother. Thank you for the poop related facts. You know.
You're more than welcome. Yeah, it was pretty true.
Always come through, man. No, thank you guys again for listening. We about to watch the rest of this Knick game and talk.
Absolutely.
Shit.
Oh my god. Yes.
So yo, enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you all again for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week. Peace out.
Peace.
What's up, guys? Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of the Still Loading Podcast, where we dive into the latest in tech, relationships, business, and science. We hope you enjoyed our convo and picked up something new today. Don't forget, you can catch all our episodes on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Just search for Still Loading with Kane and Ace. And if you like what you heard, please subscribe, leave us a review, and share the podcast with your friends. For bonus content, updates, and behind-the-scenes info, head over to StillLoading_pod on Instagram and StillLoading_pod on TikTok. We want to hear your thoughts, so drop us a comment or connect with us online. Until next time, stay curious and keep moving in this thing called life. See you in the next episode.